This is NPR News, and I'm Angela Davis. Glad you could join us this morning. Earlier this month, Ramsey County Attorney John Choi announced that his office will no longer prosecute most felony cases that stem solely from low-level traffic stops. His goal, he says, is to reduce racial profiling and racial disparities in the criminal justice system. Now, across the country, black drivers are more likely to be stopped than white motorists for minor violations, things like illegal window tints, expired registrations, or a broken taillight. Black drivers are also more likely to be searched. In St. Paul, which is in Ramsey County, black drivers were almost four times more likely to be pulled over by police than white drivers. That's according to a Pioneer Press analysis of St. Paul police data from 2016 to 2020. Traffic stops have become a focus of calls for law enforcement reform. A couple of other prosecutor offices across the country have tried to curb them. And some police departments have said they will scale back these stops on their own, including the Minneapolis Police Department. Today, we're talking about the change in traffic stop policy in Ramsey County, what led to it, and the impact it could have. The phone lines are open. We do want to hear from you, our listeners. Have you been pulled over for something other than speeding? Do you think you were profiled? Do you support this change in Ramsey County? Why or why not? You can call us at 651-227-6000. Again, the number is 651-227-6000. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. Our guests today include John Choi, who has been the Ramsey County attorney for a decade now. Good morning to you, John. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, good morning, Angela. Thanks for having me on your show today.
Sure. We also have Jason Soule on the line, and Jason is an adjunct professor in criminal justice at Hamline University in St. Paul, as well as a past president of the Minneapolis NAACP. Jason also co-founded the Humanize My Hoodie movement, using fashion to overturn stereotypes and educate around social justice. Jason, thank you for being with us this morning as well.
Thank you. Appreciate you, Angela.
All right. So, John, let's start by talking about what you see as the problem with traffic stops. And to be clear, we're not talking about police officers pulling a driver over for speeding. We're talking about stops for those minor violations like expired tabs or a single broken taillight. What have you seen that is problematic?
Well, we're talking about non-public safety stops that lead to or allow for a police officer to conduct another investigation. So it gives the reason, a legal reason, to actually pull somebody over. And then without really any other probable cause, what can happen, and it happens often, I think, to communities of color, especially African-American, is that police officers will use that tactic. And it's completely legal, by the way. But here's the problem with it, is that I think that undermines legitimacy and trust, and it's had horrendous impacts to our black and brown communities, and we really haven't questioned these practices properly, and I'm glad that now we're having this conversation and we're taking action, because we really need to focus on the impacts. You laid out some of those statistics. We can just admire that data and say, well, I guess it's so complicated that we don't know what to do. Or we can actually start thinking about what really needs to change. And one of these areas is utilizing these types of equipment violations for a reason to investigate further. And I think that's one of the things that we're trying to really get at. I used to believe at one time in my life that this type of policing did lead to good public safety outcomes. But if we really look at the data, and I no longer believe that because I've looked at the data, I've had conversations with lots of community members and better understanding the impacts that we've done to the harm that we have done to community. And I just don't think that it's a legitimate practice anymore. And so I don't want to perpetuate that. I don't want to incentivize that type of practice. And luckily here, too, I think you should make sure that the listeners understand that our policy is just really a backstop. It's a backstop to the police chiefs in my jurisdiction who have stood up and taken action. So Roseville has already enacted their policy. St. Paul has enacted, you know, the chief has spoken and said, these are traffic stops I don't want you to do, right? And also other jurisdictions like Maplewood, New Brighton will be working on this issue this fall. So if you take all those communities, that's 75% of all the cases that come here. So we should just be the backstop to all of this. So I'm glad that through a number of conversations and actions taken by police agencies together with my office, we hope to reduce these traffic stops. We hope to address head-on the racial disparity that exists and to increase and improve trust and legitimacy with police.
Racial disparities, across the country, we know that Black people and other people of color are more likely to be pulled over. But specifically, when we look at Ramsey County and Minnesota, I mentioned in the introduction that analysis by the Pioneer Press, what they found in St. Paul, looking at police data there, Black drivers were almost four times more likely to be pulled over by police than white drivers. Black people, they're not four times as many Black people in Ramsey County or Minnesota. So, I mean, it is stunning. It's shocking when you look at just the numbers, John. Is that part of what moved you to try to do something?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and this data, by the way, Angela, has been around for decades. And people have been talking about this for decades. And yet we just don't take action. The legislature had an opportunity this past summer or this past session to do something, and they chose not to. And I think it comes to a time or a period, we have to stop arguing about why these traffic stops occur, whether or not they're creating some sense of public safety. Really, we have to look at the impacts. And I think we have ignored that for generations. I mean, for generations and generations, we've asked African-American families to adapt to how they're policed. And so you have mothers and fathers who have the talk with their young loved one about how they should interact with the police to adapt to it, right? And the Department of Public Safety just recently, had these pouches that they are distributing so that, people who might get pulled over won't get, I guess, shot. And I think what needs to change is the systems. The policing needs to change instead of asking people to adapt to how they're policed.
Jason, we know for many Black families, Black individuals, many people of color, this conversation about traffic stops is very personal. And so first, I want to know about your personal experience and if you have been pulled over for a minor traffic violation. And if so, what was it like?
Man, it's the same every time, man. Like, it's slavery. You know, we got to call it for what it is. You know, it's like every time they see Black people, if you look at them, they pull you over. It's like, man, look, I'm 43. I grew up during the war on drugs. Police have always been my blocks to success, my blocks to the stuff I got to do. You know what I'm saying? So it's like it's massive disruptions. It's like it's women in Shakopee right now who need to come home behind some of these cops. We need to free Phil Evans. An innocent person serving time behind the wall. So surveillance is one part of it. But it's like, if you see my tail light is messed up, man, why don't you write a check and help me get that taken care of? That's what I've been doing in my circle, in my life. But yeah, I think I've been pulled over. Man, you look at my stuff, man. I ain't going to say in the hundreds, but it's up there. You know, and I'm not saying, I wasn't at fault at times, but we know what it is when you got Black skin. Man, you got a possibility of dying. So it's like, let's take it a step further and say, all right, if we saying they shouldn't pull us over for something that's not right, then they should be able to be held accountable. I need to see accountability of cops, shrink these departments and take care of people so that we can actually have, love and unity. We don't need cops, man. We don't need people with badges and guns, man. We know how to do this. Let's trust ourselves.
But Jason, give me the example. So you mentioned what? A broken taillight? Like, why were you stopped? The initial reasons?
Loud music. the car look hot. The car is a fancy car. Too many of us in the car. Something hanging from the thing. Might have had something hanging off the dash. You know, so it's like anything. I mean, I really mean that. And it's not just traffic stops, Angela. It's like, man, when people walking, when they catching the bus, it's policing as how it is, man. It's derived from them being slave catchers, man. It hasn't changed.
What is happening when people are walking? Are you talking about eye contact or what? What's the problem? What's problematic or in those interactions?
I'll say one time I was on my way to a meeting. This was about 2009. It was in Minneapolis. I was walking. I think I was in Northeast. I was walking across the street, and I wasn't walking at the corner. I wasn't walking at the light. But it's like, I've never been hit by a car. I'm 43. I can look both ways. I can get across. This is me personally. I don't recommend this for anybody else, but for me, it works. The officer, when I made it across the street, he said, "Hey, why you disrespect me like that?" I said, "What?" I said, "Man, I'm not even finna do this, man." I said, "I got a meeting on the second floor. I'm not, man." He said, "No, let me see your ID." So it's pretty much anything. If I'm in a grocery store, like, that's why we started Humanize My Hoodie, man. That's why I don't wear suits no more, because it's like, when I got on a suit, it's like they kind of wonder if I know my rights, or if I know something, or if I'm, you know, if I can like challenge them. But when I got on a hoodie and sweats, they think they can murk me and get away with it. So we just got to understand, policing is bad for us. It's not one part of it. We're not talking no bad apples. The whole thing is rotten.
Right. Well, we're talking about a change in traffic stop policy brought on by the Ramsey County Attorney John Choi, who's on the line with us, as well as Jason Soul, who has been working to make changes in the criminal justice system. But we're taking your phone calls, too, because I want to hear your stories. If you have been pulled over by police for something other than speeding, and if you think you were profiled and the impact of that, give us a call at 651-227-6000. Tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. Let's take a phone call right now in Minneapolis, where Adriana is on the phone. Good morning to you. And what did you want to share with us?
Well, good morning, Angela. I can feel the passion in Jason's voice. I'm in my 40s also, was raised, born and raised in St. Paul. And my mom happened to move us out of St. Paul into the Roseville, Lauderdale area, and we got pulled over relentlessly. I would say the time from, like, I was 17 to 22, going back and forth from Roseville, from St. Paul, that Como area, up Snelling to where we lived behind Harmar area, the same three or four officers would pull us over all the time. And it would be not even expired tabs or broken lights. It was just like, oh, well, you're obstructing the view of your tabs, which I did it as a young person when I was 17 and just happy to have a car that was rolling. Mm-hmm. It was just disheartening to be pulled over every night when you're leaving work, just trying to make it back home. And, you know, a lot of times my mom would be like, well, what did you do? And I'm like, well, I was just driving. Like, I'm just trying to make it home. And the one time, like, my insurance was probably like a day or two over, they towed my car. I was stuck on the road. They left me there. And my mom wasn't home. I didn't have nobody to come pick me up. I had to walk back to St. Paul. And I to this day, a lot of us who are Black in Minnesota stay out of Roseville. We stay out of New Brighton. We stay out of the Oakdale area because they're the places where the police see you and they'll pull you over for the most obscene things. It's absolutely ridiculous. If it's not that, it's, your tint's too dark. Did you know you ran that stop sign? You're like, no, I didn't. I stopped at the stop sign. But because you're not from those cities, you're like, well, did I run the stop sign? You start second-guessing yourself. You start second-guessing if you really are doing criminal activity or if something you did broke the law because you're policed so heavy in these cities. And it's a proud day that Ramsey County would say, okay, let's reevaluate how we're treating minorities, Black people especially, in our county where most of the people who I grew up with were in our 40s, and we could just the story that my uncle would tell, my cousins would tell, that they'd be left somewhere with pepper spray in the back of the police car. I mean, I have some crazy, egregious stories for my older uncles and my older male cousins where the police just pulled them over, left them somewhere, or took them, you know, four or five blocks out of the way of a highway so that they had to make it back home and they didn't have a way to get there. So I just, I know what Jason feels. I understand his passion. And Ramsey County, it's about time because we just cannot continue to do the same thing over and over.
Adriana, thank you there in Minneapolis for calling and sharing your personal experiences. County Attorney Choi, John, let's talk in more detail about the change that you're trying to make. And I want to know, like, how often do these types of traffic stops and searches, do they result in felony conviction? I mean, how often do law enforcement officers find illegal weapons or drugs or stolen property or other evidence of crime?
Yeah, thanks, Angela, for that question, because I think that's one of the most important points here to make is that, you know, some people call this jackpot policing, you know, in the context that, you know, to do these types of investigatory stops utilizing a valid reason to pull somebody over for like an equipment violation, in a very small amount of instances will they ever recover some form of contraband, like weapons or guns. So if we're talking about weapons, the hit rate is less than 2%. So let's think about that. In what industry in America would we ever perpetuate something that is only effective less than 2% of the time? So put it in the context that people are talking about vaccines, right? If 98% of the people who got a vaccine experience side effects, we never would approve that vaccine. But yet we've been doing this for a really long time in policing. And now is, I think we need to look at the data. We need to understand and listen to the voices of people that have been impacted by this police practice and really commit to making the change. This is not an easy change, and it's because a lot of people, I think, have a hard time with this because they're thinking that somehow this type of practice will keep them safe, but we have to really look at the data. And it is a very, very small amount of times where, and there will be times where, you know, somebody can point to, well, look, we've recovered a handgun or we've recovered whatever it might be. But we have to think about the other side of this. And the other side of this is immense. It's large. And it's had really negative impacts on people. And I think that undermines the legitimacy of the police. It undermines police-community relations. So we have to think about new ways. And I'm so glad in Ramsey County that we're doing this in collaboration with the majority of my jurisdiction in terms of police leadership.
And John, in a few minutes, I want to get to some data that we have that my colleagues at APM Research Lab that they were able to compile based on some surveys that they did with Minnesotans that looks at their views of police and this perception of trust. But Jason, first, I know that you are very skeptical of reform. Two questions. What do you think about this step? Because it is a step. What do you think about what County Attorney Troy is doing?
You know, I'm always glad when people are trying to figure out how to, you know, reduce black people being, you know, oppressed by police. I'm always for that, you know, but the reason I'm not so big on reform is because I spent a lot of time, you know, I mean, John Choi seen me grind out here. Everybody seen me grow up out here. You know, I came here at 18. So for people to see me over 25 years really work to right my wrongs, I'm just working with people who see the vision and can just look out for community members. Because a lot of times it looks like it's a step, but then it's just like, man, how are you holding them accountable if they don't do it? So, yeah, of course, I got to be skeptical, man. Like it would be at this point with all the data and everything we have, man, I can't trust none of that stuff. I got to really wait to see what really happens. So it's like, yeah, I'm grateful that we having this conversation because people are learning from it. But it's like, we need to create our own radical ecosystem pods. So check out, man, look, check out Rep for Minnesota. We doing the work where it's like we hold police accountable, but we need to just go ahead and do our work, man. It's like, you know, four or five people in your life who could show up for you if you're in a terrible situation. Let's call them, you know, so let's figure out and do our work and dig in. So it's like, I can't, like I said, I got exhausted working in these systems, man. I worked with all the nonprofits. Y'all know, like I made my rounds around here with just trying to give my all and my commitment to keeping community safe. So when I see, you know, police officers still like in power, it's like, man, did y'all see what happened to Philando Castile? Did y'all see what happened to George Floyd? Because if y'all saw what I saw, y'all wouldn't be, you know, just trying to like do, you know, this reform or that reform. It's like it's over with for that, man. We need something real. That's not going to protect people and keep them safe.
Jason, I'm sure you heard this in the news yesterday. It was announced, you know, you mentioned George Floyd. After George Floyd's murder, there was a momentum for addressing police reform at a national level. Democrats in the House passed the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act back in February. It faced Republican opposition in the Senate. And then just yesterday, we saw reports that lawmakers have given up trying to negotiate a compromise. So it looks like that there really won't be any federal action on police reform anytime soon. So what do you make of that? Does that surprise you? How did you respond to that news?
I'm never surprised. I mean, you know, it's like it's still oppression. You know, in Minnesota, I'm starting to say, like, we like the land of 10,000 committees. Like, we always say we gonna do something. And it's like, man, I got a lot of gray hairs, man, waiting on, you know, people to follow through with what they said. When I came home from prison for doing wrong, like, I got caught with drugs, I got caught with stuff, but it's like, I didn't need a cage. I needed college. When you see me in college, that's when you see me around Angela Davis and other, like Marion Wright Edelman and people like that. So I know what's needed, you know, and like I say, my crew, my people, whether it's Humanize My Hoodie or if it's Rep, we really taking care of people and bringing people home and really just loving each other. We don't talk about what we're doing. It's like, we do it and, you know, we might share it with you later or something, but we just really grounded and really want to honor the ancestors and really, like, listen to our elders who, like, really loved us to repair. Because when the war on drugs hit, it just took back all the civil rights gains and all across America, Detroit, Chicago, we was thrown in cages. We haven't rectified any of that. So it's like, you know, we gotta be clicking on all cylinders. So, you know, we gotta understand it's a legal system. It's not a justice system. It's no justice in it. It's legal. So know your rights, man.
John, what were your thoughts as you've been watching what's happening in Congress, learning that things have fallen apart and there may not be any action on police reform?
Well, there's no surprise on my part. Actually, we have a pretty entrenched pattern in America. Where we have moments of civil discord, civil unrest. You can go back to 1968 when the Kerner Commission was formed by President Johnson. And interestingly, that commission came out with a report. I think it surprised President Johnson because he was expecting something different, but they kind of called out the racism in America and talked about the connections to police brutality and called for change. And then nothing ever happened. And then over time, we have more unrest because a lot of it does fall squarely on how police interact with community. And then you saw 1992 in Los Angeles, right? And then just more recently, the things that have been happening across America. And we just never really make those changes. That's a pattern that we have in America. And I've called that, if you're, you know, people always ask me, well, what's an example of systemic injustice or racism? And I think it's when we have these moments where we need to make the changes, but we don't listen to the voices that have been impacted, and we fail to make these changes.
All right. Before we take a news break, I want to take another phone call from a listener as we're talking about traffic stops. We want to hear from you. Have you been pulled over for something other than speeding? Do you think you were profiled? And do you support the changes that the county attorney in Ramsey County is trying to make when it comes to traffic stop policies? Give us a call at 651-227-6000. Let's take a phone call from Minneapolis where Matthew's on the phone. Matthew, thank you for waiting. And what do you want to tell us?
Yeah, you doing, Angela?
Hi, Matthew. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was down in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and I was coming back to Minneapolis, and I was on 94, mm-hmm. and I got tinted windows on my vehicle, and I had the driver's side window the window was rolled down, and as I passed the state trooper, he immediately came out with the lights on me, pulled me over. And when I asked him what he stopped me for, he said that I was speeding, even though it was already cars flying past me. But I guess it was just one of them things when I made eye contact with him, you know, and we seen the tinted windows on the passenger side, I mean, on the driver's side and back. You know, that's what he said. He was like, I pulled you over because you were speeding, plus your windows look too dark and everything. So I just felt like I was kind of profiled once I made eye contact with him and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Right. So what do you think about a change in policy, maybe creating a deterrent for making stops?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, it's just one of them things that I feel like, you know, African-Americans just want to be treated, you know what I'm saying, just like other communities, with respect, with dignity, with compassion, with understanding, but just overall just being fair, you know what I mean? But just African-Americans don't want to be harassed by the police or looked at as, because our skin color is black, that we automatically suspicious. We looked at as, you know, criminals and things like that, based off a lot of our people coming from, you know what I'm saying, marginalized and disadvantaged communities and poor communities, you know what I mean?
Right.
We just, all black African-American, we just want to be treated fairly, like I say, treated with dignity, with respect, with compassion, and not harassed and stuff like that. You know, if you do something wrong, it's illegal, you know what I'm saying? That's one thing, but just to be walking down the street or just to be driving or sitting in a car and because you're black, you get pulled over or you looked at as suspicious because you're black, that's, you know, that's just not right. You know what I mean?
Thank you, Matthew. You know, officer- that's Matthew calling there from Minneapolis. Now back to the conversation about criminal justice reform and traffic stops. My guests include Ramsey County Attorney John Choi, who just changed his office's policy on traffic stops that involve minor violations like a broken taillight or expired tabs. His office will no longer prosecute most felony crimes that are discovered when a driver is pulled over by police for a reason unrelated to public safety. We're also talking to Jason Soule, and Jason is an adjunct professor in criminal justice at Hamline University in St. Paul, as well as a past president of the Minneapolis NAACP. He also co-founded the Humanize My Hoodie movement, using fashion to overturn stereotypes and educate around racial justice. And we are taking your phone calls. We want to know about your experiences, if you've been pulled over for something other than speeding, and if you think you were profiled. Give us a call at 651-227-6000. Tweet me at Angela Davis NPR. I want to take another phone call right now in St. Paul. We have John on the phone. Good morning, John, and thank you for calling in.
Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to point out, you know, in this type of discussion, one of the statistics that never seems to be part of the conversation is the fact that you know, you mentioned four times more likely to pull over black drivers and white drivers, but you know, the statistics show that people of color commit four times the number of homicides. I think the statistics are 13% of the population is responsible for 55-60% of the homicides, and I think statistics are similar for armed robbery. And so, I mean, you're putting the police in a difficult position, saying, you know, you can't pull people over, and if they have a legitimate reason to do that. So anyway, I was just hoping John could comment on those statistics.
All right, that's John in St. Paul. Let's ask our Ramsey County Attorney John Choi. John is saying that people of color have are more likely to commit serious crimes than whites. And what can you say to that, John?
Well, and I want to thank John for coming on the show and talking about this, because I think that, you know, when we talk, when we think about all of these crime statistics and also how policing plays out, it has a huge, huge impact on under-resourced communities, communities of color. And in St. Paul, you know, we have certain areas where there's higher prevalence of crime. I know the police grids in St. Paul where, and specifically in many of those instances or areas, they're highly African-American neighborhoods, right? And so as we think about that, we have to recognize that it's that community that has been the most impacted by the homicides, the violent crime, but also the type of policing that I think they people should not be subject to, right? And so I think we, as we think about these strategies, I think we should listen to those communities about what we should be doing. And, you know, when we announced this policy, you know, there was someone had had a question, and the question was something that the police union stated, this is irresponsible, this is going to lead to bad things happening for our community. But there was a poignant moment in that press conference where Tyrone Terrell, who is a president of the African American Leadership Council, kind of came to the microphone and took it and said, listen, You know, our communities are the ones that suffer from these higher homicide rates. It's my community that has a lot of these issues, and we're saying that we want this to happen. We support this because we actually think it will lead to better public safety. And I think we should listen to that, right? I think oftentimes we come to these conversations and we think we have all of the answers, but we never ask the community that's been the most impacted, right? And so I think that's a part of what we're trying to do here, is that to say that, of course, we need to focus on these high homicide rates and violence in communities. And I think a lot of it has to, there's connections to poverty and all of these things, right, and trauma. So we need to address that, but we should address it in ways that are consistent with how the community wants to be policed. And so I think that's a complicated issue. I'm glad that John raised it. We need to have more conversations about that. But I think this is what we need to get to in our community in America, where we need to say, we need to stop arguing about all of this, like why this happens. We need to just start focusing on the fact that these outcomes are unacceptable. Right.
Jason, what are your thoughts about, the homicide rate and armed robbery numbers when we look at people of color as being the perpetrators?
Come on. A lot of times we know this. It's government facilitating a lot of that stuff. Like, we all know this, man. Like, for real. Like, don't look at my community and say, like, look at how we get our hands on firearms and stuff in Black communities, man. That stuff usually coming from outside of those communities. So it's like, you've seen Central Park 5, you've seen 13th, you've seen War on Drugs in Chicago, you've seen what they do to people in Waterloo, Iowa. Come on, man, that's the same thing everywhere, man. Like, we can't get an organic tomato in our neighborhoods or a laundromat that's close by, but we can get an AK-47? Man, come on, man, I know what it is, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's people who can always say, oh, man, we got to figure this out and we got to listen to them and listen to that. Man, look, I've been pouring out my guts out here since 2004. I'm talking, I done talked to everybody. A lot of us have talked to everybody. So it's like, either they not listening or they just really don't care. Because it's like, yeah, it's going to be higher in my community. I got no opportunity. There's nothing here but guns and drugs. And somehow these drugs stay in abundance. Don't make sense, man. So I like, it makes perfect sense. But to have these conversations and have all these reports and have all this data, and to continuously get amnesia and say, wait a second, man, they more violent over there. It's like, no research says that a person's race determines their level of violence. No research gonna back that. So it's like, when people bring that up, it's just like, man, that's just a cop out. You don't give us, like, Minnesota is one of the most racist places in the country. Like, we've been saying that for a long time. Didn't we do a lot of this stuff when Jamar Clark was killed? So it's like, man, like, don't play with me about, yeah, y'all more violent over there. It's like, no, we ain't more violent. It's like, people are hungry. They have no opportunity. They can't get food. But somehow there's a lot of bad things to tear this community down. So let's just honor how that stuff get in the hands of a young person, or how, you know, we block from wealth and opportunities. Like, that's the conversation, man. Like, when people do that, I feel like they playing devil's advocate. And like, we really don't got no time for that.
Let's take another phone call from a listener as we talk about traffic stops and police. This is an anonymous caller calling in from Minneapolis. And what do you want to share with us?
Hey, what I was going to go into was the demographic of creating crime in Black citizens who are trying to do better. So routine stops, I've had about 27 stops. I've actually lived in Waconia. I tend to live in the suburban areas for schooling purposes and also for better opportunities. A lot of the times, you know, the neighbors and things like that don't want you in those areas.
Are you a person of color?
I am a person of color. I'm African-American. Mm-hmm. I'm 28 years old. So when I get stopped, usually it's said that it's a routine stop. Those routine stops, the initial stops, becomes the basis for investigation, right? So you just need a reason for the initial stop. And ultimately, what a lot of police officers want to do is they want to have the opportunity to find something in your vehicle so that the initial stop doesn't matter whatsoever at all. So, hey, you know, there was a routine stop or whatever, which had no reason, but we found A, B, and C inside of the vehicle. Or, you know, we did a traffic stop that was really unlawful, but we found this, which creates, which ultimately, it makes the initial stop not matter. And a lot of the times, the police officers won't tell you exactly why you got pulled over, and it creates an argument. And that's something that you don't want to do as an African-American, because, you know, ultimately you're risking your life with arguing with a police officer. You want to make him... you want to make him feel comfortable so you don't get shot ultimately. So you don't want to say, hey, why did you pull me over and things like that or whatever may be the case. Usually with a lot of white citizens that I see, friends of mine or whatever may be the case, what they say is, hey, they can mostly argue with the cop or they'll ask, hey, what was the reason for the stopping it? Or the police officer will come up to the car and say, hey, well, do you know why you were stopped? And that's a question that I've never been asked before. So I would like to go into the fact that almost all of my stops that were made were unlawful stops, and most of them didn't lead to tickets.
You weren't speeding? You didn't have expired tabs?
Correct. Weren't speeding, no expired tabs. It's just being an African American, and you know, in those areas, you're usually one of the only African Americans who are on the street. You know, everyone else around you is white inside of their car or whatever may be the case. I'm not listening to loud music. You know, I try to be cautious in those areas because I want to avoid having those situations happen. So you have to understand that. What I wanted to go across was the fact that we criminalize African American civilians who are trying to better themselves, right? If they're trying to live inside of a better community, or if they're, you know, they're going to school or whatever may be the case. What I mean by criminalization is that we compound tickets. So we try to get African American citizens. Get them a ticket or whatever may be the case, and compound that ticket. They can't pay for that expense or whatever, you know, and then compound that ticket, and it turns them into a criminal.
And so creates new problems. I'm going to let you go because I want to share some data here, too. I mentioned that my colleagues at APM Research Lab, they recently surveyed Minnesotans on their views of police, and they found some pretty big differences in people's attitudes toward police that varied along race and ethnic lines. So, for example, 71% of white Minnesotans said that they trust the police in Minnesota to do what is right about always or most of the time, compared to only 43% of black, indigenous, or other people of color. Only 1 in 5 black Minnesotans responded that they regularly trust the police to do what is right, and that's the lowest rate across all racial and ethnic groups. And when it comes to traffic stops in particular, APM Research Lab also found that black, Latino, and indigenous drivers said that they are more likely to be pulled over than white drivers. About a quarter of black, Latino, and indigenous people surveyed said that they had been pulled over more than once by police in the last 2 years. About 13% of white drivers said that they've been pulled over more than once. And so, County Attorney Choi, when we talk about police and trust and just the impact over time, you know, what do you see what happens to this relationship and how that just worsens the problems?
Right. I think that those are real stats. Those are born out of lived experiences, and we should reckon with that. And I think if we don't recognize that these are true, then what ends up happening is that the legitimacy of policing, and that's policing cannot exist without the trust and confidence of the people it's supposed to protect and serve. And so if many people in certain communities are feeling a certain way that policing isn't working out that way, and instead it's harming them, then you start having these negative impact, real impacts on public safety. So if you look at communities across America, you know, one of the indicators about, I think, of whether or not there's good trust and confidence with police in the communities that police are serving is, for instance, the homicide clearance rate, right? I'm really proud to say that in St. Paul, I think our St. Paul Police Department is doing a lot of things right, and they're actually on the they're a part of this work around reducing these types of traffic stops. But they have a 93% clearance rate. And if you look at other other big cities across America, I mean, we're talking about clearance rates that are less than 50% because the community does not feel a sense of responsibility or trust with the police to come forward. So I think that's how things play out when you start losing that trust and legitimacy. And then you also get civil unrest and all of those things that are associated with people not believing that they're being served and protected. So the type of proactive initiatives to reckon with these truths and then to do something about it. That's the part where we failed in America. We oftentimes have these conversations, but we can't get to the action because it feels like it's so hard to do. But we have to do these things, and ultimately it's the right thing to do.
And Jason, what have you seen? What have you experienced? What does repeatedly getting stopped by police for minor traffic violation do to trust? What is the mental health impact of it?
Man, trust. Look, how do you really make up for over 100 years of oppression? Like, that's my lens. How, like, you're talking about trust. How do you make up for over 100 years of harm to Black and brown and other people of color? Like, how do you make that up? So it's like, when we talk trust, it's like, that's laughable right now. Y'all got a lot of work to do. I can't trust nobody who keep doing stuff to me. That don't make sense. So why would I start talking about trust, man? Like, you got a lot of work to put in. Like, Choi knows this and other people know this, man. The level of, like, surveillance me and my friends have had in this lifetime will probably, like, knock your socks off for real. Like, the guy came on earlier, talked about tint. When we had tint on our windows, it was a practice for cops to pull us over. No, you know the operations they've had, Operation Heat, Operation whatever, where they just anytime they see us, it don't matter if we doing something tonight. It's an operation going so you can just shake down anybody you want to shake down. We've lived through a lot of that stuff, like, and I'm grateful we can tell about it. But one night, an officer just put me in his car, took my clothes out my car, threw them in the snow, and pissed all over them. So when you talk about trust, man, it's like, man, you got a lot of making up to do, man. Let's start there. Start with the making up. Then we can talk about, because it's like, if we just keep playing like it's all kumbaya and, yeah, we're going to work together and figure it out, man, I can't lay in bed with my oppressor. That don't even make sense to me. So I'm saying, we have these conversations. We have the best reports. We have the best everything to see what exactly is happening, but we never have the political will to do it. So that's the difference. We're very educated here in Minnesota about these topics, but you know what I'm saying? When it comes down to it, it's like people need to go ahead and put their money where their mouth is.
Let's take another phone call as we talk about traffic stops in Minneapolis. Let's talk to Numa, who's on the line. And Numa, what do you want to share?
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. What I would like to talk about is the other aspect of policing. Because of all these new laws, I live in Northside, Minneapolis, and I see my neighbors now, they're complaining about when they go to the police and they complain about things that happen to them. For example, they need a police report for an accident, or they complain about crimes that are occurring in their neighborhood. They see the police are not enforcing those little crimes like they used to. And I feel like the police, for lack of better words, are kind of rebelling against the system also, because they feel like they're pressure, and that's the way to responding and say, hey, we don't enforce these little crimes anymore. If you have insurance, hit and run, for example, go deal with your insurance. And little crimes like this, I think in criminal justice system, they call it a broken window theory. It's like little crimes eventually lead to a more serious crime just because there is not enough presence in the police, in the community. And that's what I see, this new trends now happening, particularly in Northside Minneapolis. Mm. That's what I want to see. Thank you.
Thank you, Numa. John Choi, our Ramsey County attorney, I want to ask you this question before we run out of time. A lot of folks read this news last week, and it's a very disturbing case. The case of four people allegedly killed in St. Paul and then taken to a farm field in Wisconsin. It shocked a lot of people. They were found in an SUV. And I just see that today, that this morning, that your office, the Ramsey County Attorney's Office has filed more charges against the father of Darren Osborne, and that is the man accused in the murder. How extraordinary is this case, and how is your office handling it?
Well, I mean, this is something that is very traumatic for our community to learn about something like this. And then, of course, we have to get to the truth of what happened. And so I appreciate the hard work that police have put into it. But as we kind of this is a pending case, so I don't want to get too much into it. But certainly this is one of those things that really shocks a community. And we have to do our part to ensure that we get justice for the victims and hold the people that are responsible accountable. And so obviously this would be one of our most important cases when we have homicides, right? So that's really all I can really say about the particular case. I don't want to go into the specific case because it's still a pending one.
When we look at your job as a county attorney, how has your thinking evolved? I mean, did you look at other cities or counties or across the country when you were deciding we need to do something different with traffic stops? Was there some inspiration? And we just have about 2 minutes left here, John.
Yeah. So, I mean, I certainly am a different human being and a county attorney than when I first started a decade ago as the elected county attorney for Ramsey County. You know, I see the world in many different ways. And I think a part of that is just being connected to community. You know, the case involving Geronimo Yanez, who killed Philando Castile, in many ways it's changed me in terms of how I think about things that we need to do and to change. Because if you think about that particular case, you know, Philando was killed because it was one of these pretextual traffic stops. The officer thought that this Philando might have been the robber from 2 days ago of a convenience store. Well, if you really believe that, then what he should have done is he should have conducted a felony traffic stop and pulled him out of the car. But he didn't have that level of information. He just had a hunch. And so instead what he does is that he pulls over Philando Castile because of the broken taillight to investigate further, right? And so I think that type of experience and understanding better about really that this type of traffic or this policing, it doesn't really work, and that we've actually created lots of harm for our communities. And so that's a part of the journey that I've been on. And I think that our community is doing the same thing. I think we're understanding better the things that we didn't see before.
Well, our time is up for this hour, but this is a conversation that I know we could have for many hours. And I just want to thank our two guests for sharing your personal experience and your expertise. We've been talking with Jason Soul, an adjunct professor in criminal justice at Hamline in St. Paul, as well as a past president of the Minneapolis NAACP. Thank you, Jason, for your time today. And thank you to Ramsey County Attorney John Choi. This conversation today was produced by Maya Beckstrom. Be safe, everyone, and I'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 9. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder, if you want to catch the show in real time, tune in and call in at a new time, 9 a.m. weekdays on NPR News.